Hey, it's Christine from Storyworthy. Today on the show, ballerina, Broadway actress, and now author Georgina Paskogin talks about her new book, Swan Dive, The Making of a Rogue Ballerina.
In City Ballet, I play a lot of strong women. I am a jumper and a turner. What I mean by that, listeners, is that like I do a lot of like the split jumps, like think of like gymnasts. I excel at jumping, and I also like to turn, so revolve on the little tippy toes. Ballet is an extreme art form. Being a ballerina is basically like being a silent actress.
Today on the show, ballerina, Broadway actress, and now author Georgina Paskogin talks about her new book, Swan Dive, The Making of a Rogue Ballerina. Stay close.
Hey, my name is Georgina Paskogin, the Rogue Ballerina, and you're listening to Storyworthy.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm coming to you from Los Angeles, California. Whether you're a longtime fan of the show of over 11 years, or you're a new listener, welcome to Storyworthy. Now, I hope you guys enjoyed the show last week with comedian Deborah DiGiovanni. Deborah and I have been trying to connect for like 4 years. And one time, in fact, I had her on my show at the Improv, and she couldn't make it last minute. And, you know, when you're a producer of a show, you know, or talent, wherever you are, you got to show up. You know what I mean? You kind of have to show up, right? And when you cancel day of, you know, it's not a great idea. So anyway, Deborah sends me a text that she has to cancel, and she shows me a picture of her hospital band at Cedars. And I'm like, you're here, Gina. Gina's smiling, laughing. I mean,
she brought the receipt.
It was so crazy. It's like, I believe you, dude. I believe you that you can't make it. But anyway, Deborah DiGiovanni and I finally caught up last week, and she tells the story about her worst or her most troublesome apartment. And it turns out, just to give you the upshot, and you got to listen to it because it's super funny, is basically she had raccoons living above her, but not like 4 raccoons. There were like 30 raccoons, and they ended up like shitting in front of the door, so she couldn't even open the door. Like, it was very personal. And, you know, and she couldn't get them out, and she had to call, you know, animal control. And anyway, the upshot is, you know how you get rid of raccoons, Georgina?
I do not.
Okay, ready? You play talk radio. They hate the sound of humans' voices.
Oh my God.
Is that funny? So she just had to like blare Fox News on a radio upstairs, and then they all left.
I mean, that's one way to get rid of me.
Yeah, I'd be out too. And then to make them not come back, you put laundry detergent all around the perimeter of the space, of the roof. Yeah, for her it was a roof. But it was like a room roof, like where you actually, you know, use it as a room. Anyway, point is, go back, you guys. Listen to Deborah DiGiovanni. She's funny as hell, and I'm super happy I finally got her on the show. But not this week, folks. Not this week. I'm super excited to have in the house our first ballerina. I mean, look, I've had 689 episodes of Storyworthy, Gina, and you're my first ballerina.
Hey, there's always time for a first.
Yay! I am so excited, and I met you a couple of weeks ago at one of your performances / book launches for your brand new book, Swan Dive, The Making of a Rogue Ballerina, which is such a good title, by the way.
Thank you.
Did you come up with the whole title?
I had to fight for that title. Yeah. Not going to lie. We fought for that title.
But they liked Swan Dive, right?
We weren't sure. We weren't sure for, I this was a night where I was like not sleeping, and I was like, I'm going to go to sleep. I'm going to sleep on it. It's going to come to me. I'm going to manifest it. I woke up in the morning because I wanted to play on Swan Lake. Because I feel like
if people
know what Swan Lake is, I mean, you had Black Swan. And which was like a huge movie that kind of crossed over in into a more popular sense. And I just wanted to do a play on that. And then I was like, also be funny, because I am inherently just a wacko. And and then I woke up and I was like, I got it. Swan dive.
It is. It's so perfect. And a swan does always fit a ballerina. It's just, yeah.
But you know, swans are like really mean. So like, it's funny on a lot of different levels. It's nuanced. It's a nuanced title.
It's very nuanced. And the word rogue is nuanced. But wait a minute. Is a swan, is that the same as a goose? No.
No, they're not the same.
Okay, there's a goose, a swan, and a duck. Is it true?
Yes, I believe that's true.
Okay, let's start the joke. There's a goose, a swan, and a duck crossing the road. And the first one says, what the fuck are you? Okay, listen, you guys, I'm allowed to chat with Gina this way, not only because I already met her and she decided to come on Storyworthy to talk about her own swan dive and about her book, but also because Gina and I are from the very same area, Western Pennsylvania. Gina, you're from Altoona and I'm from Pittsburgh, and you're also one of six kids and I'm one of six kids.
This is it's uncanny. It's quite eerie. Well, I'm sitting, and this is one of the rare times that I am actually in Altoona, Pennsylvania right now. I drove home. It's like a rare 36-hour window that I had. I never get to see my family, and this is like the busiest time. It doesn't seem to be slowing down until like 2022, and who knows what's going to happen with the pandemic raging out of control right now. So I was just like, I'm taking my window. I'm coming home. I'm hugging my parents.
Gina, thank you so much for coming on, man. That means so much to me. You're taking part of your, 48-hour window or whatever at home to come on Storyworthy. Thank you.
Well, I committed to you first. So, see, speaking of keeping commitments, I committed to you first, and then I was like, I'm going to go home. They understand.
So, yeah, well, and also in your book, you talk about when you have a window like a Christmas time when you can go home for like 18 hours and you guys, would all jump in the car after a performance of Nutcracker and start heading home. And you have other friends that live relatively close. That's pretty rare, right? Ballerinas from Altoona?
Yeah, I happen to be close friends. I consider them my brothers. There have been a number of people that have come from central Pennsylvania that have gone off to have very successful careers. So the joke is, like, we like to say there must have been something in the water that created dancers. The brothers Angle, Tyler and Jared, are from right up in Juniata. And my very best friend, who lives now in Italy, she danced with me. She had a successful career before she decided to go a different route.
Yeah. Oh, that's really fun. Yeah. When you talk about those guys, Tyler and Jared, it's like, it sounds so 80s kids. Like, it's so funny to
me. We were.
Those names are hilarious. And I know your name is Georgina, but people mostly do call you Gina, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So here's what I want to talk about real quick before we get into your story. And that is going to be more about the book Swan Dive and your life as a ballerina. I wanted to ask you about, so you grew up in Altoona, Catholic, of course. That's the other thing that's a through line, right?
Yes.
Western Pennsylvania in general. Mm-hmm. And what do your brothers and sisters think of your career choice? And what are they doing in life? I'm just curious.
You would have to ask them what their exact opinions are. I do feel like generally it feels a little surreal. Like, listen, I'm always just, I'm the sister. I'm Gina. To my older brothers, I'm still Gina. They're always going to tease me. And to like my younger sister, I'm still her, my sister who lives out in LA, who was at our opening launch of the book that Phil Rosenthal and Monica Rosenthal so generously hosted, and Red Cat, CalArts. It was when we managed to do it safely with the ever shifting guidelines. It was an incredible night.
It was a great night.
A super powerful discussion too, I must add. But my sister has, she always saw me. This is interesting because now they're all reading the book. My sister read it earlier on, and she kind of called me, and we have gotten so much close. My baby sister and I have always been close, but we have gotten so much closer over the course of this pandemic because we spent so much time together. I haven't been with any of my siblings in a true sense of the word time. We're talking like not even a week spent with them since I was 16. So like, yeah. It's weird to think of my actual blood relatives as people whom do not know me. And the people who really truly know me are work employees, because I spend more, like, my life, my work just requires me to spend so much time away from home. So that's been a weird sort of juxtaposition, if you will, and a weird reality. Even just coming home with my parents sometimes think I'm still this 15-year-old girl that they dropped off, because like we're kind of stuck in that time now. Yeah, after sure. reading
it's
the
like
book.
An arrested development
sort of
in a way.
Yeah,
so I know, but like, did you did get some special treatment, because I know that your mom, you know, would like portion your meals and put them separate from everybody else's in the refrigerator.
I mean, that's only because like I had three brothers who like brothers will eat everything, and they're giant. Oh, I know. Like, you know, my brother's like 6'4". And so like, it was just to make sure I had food, and like they were asleep when I came home, but sure, like, yeah, my mom's an Italian mom. She's going to make sure I'm fit.
Well, that's the other thing. My mom's Italian as well. God, we have so many things in common. And I only have one brother in my family. There's five girls, one boy. But my mother would make my brother sit down at 6 p.m. every night for dinner, and he would eat a box of macaroni and cheese. He'd eat the whole goddamn box. My mom would cook him a box of macaroni. And that would be the first part of his meal, you know, to put in his stomach, like your brother, tall and athletic. And anyway, and then the rest of us all sat down at 6:15. So there's 8 of us around the table, and we'd all have a portion. And then when we were done eating, my mother would just nod to my brother like, go ahead, Scotty. And then he'd clear the table because he was an eating machine.
Yes.
And even to this day, my brother does not take, I don't even care if he's listening to this, I'll tell you right now, Scotty, he doesn't take a fork to his mouth. He puts his head to the plate and he just shovels like, he just eats so much food. Men, and especially boys, goddamn, they eat a lot of food, right?
Well, I would venture that ballerinas eat a lot of food, too. That's a misnomer that we don't eat. So I also eat a lot. And so she knew that I was training. And so just like making sure that everyone had enough. And so, yeah, it's just like, you just also, what's great, here's the ticket. What I've learned in my many years of being in relationship with the opposite sex is that men don't look that far into the fridge. So if you're trying to really, truly hide something, just put it in the back. And so that's what my mom would do. It just would be in the back of the fridge. And I would ask her, be like, why is it so, why do I have to like go past the milk and the orange juice and the leftovers from 2 days ago to get to my dinner? She's like, because they're not looking that far, dear.
That's so cute. Boy, she must have been so happy to have you, because it was three boys in a row, right?
No, it was actually, the rundown goes Stacy, my oldest half sister, Joseph, Tony, myself, straight up middle child, if you can't tell already, right, then Corey, right. Christina.
Right, exactly. Okay. And all very Catholic names, aren't they? They are, aren't they?
Yeah, very,
I think so.
Very Catholic Italian names. I mean, we have double Catholic. You had Filipino Catholic, too, on top of it. My dad. So just like a big old family.
And Filipino Catholic is very straight up as well. I mean, it's pretty serious. I mean, in terms of like the mass, I mean, it's the same mass, but I mean, it's diehard, don't you think?
I mean, there's devotion. It's devotion, and it's
that's
there.
Good.
And my devotion doesn't necessarily come out in the religious sense. It comes out in my devotion to dance. And I think, you know, I
just thought that was very sweetly said by you, and very pedestrian. You know, it's a devotion. So now your brothers and sisters have normal careers. But here's the thing that sets it apart. They go to New York City and you can take them backstage, right? You can show them. I mean, and they know dancers and singers. And have they all been up, et cetera, to see you?
Surprisingly, not that often. I mean, like, so my sister lived in New York, and she was on a career trajectory to be another dancer. And when and it should be said that once I got my apprenticeship with New York City Ballet, she took one look at my life and was like, never mind. We're not, no. And she chose a career even harder, which is, you know, becoming a mom. But like,
that so is, true. In a way, yeah.
It's even harder. But I think where my siblings, it just seems so disparate from their lives. You know, like, you're from a small town. It's very easy to stay in the small town. And so, yes, they've come to see me do performances, but like, there are some, like, I still have to tell, my parents were never stage parents in that sort of sense in the word. Like, I still call them and have to tell them, they're like, oh, I'm working on this new piece. It's going to be a premiere. This is actually a big deal. And I really want you to make the effort to come, because they're like, New York City is a lot of sensory overload for many people in my family, and we've got kids, and like, sometimes New York City is too much for me, which is why I love LA. You can be in a car. You don't have to be in that crowded subway.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. So what's up with ballerinas always sewing their shoes? Can you tell me what is that about? Because I feel like, just get new ones. I mean, why is everybody always with a, there's a needle and a thread in every ballet scene I've ever seen in my life. What's going on?
Well, there's a simple explanation to that. So the pointe shoe is a slipper. And so when it comes to us, yes, and we have various, like, in a normal season, I would go through sometimes 5 new pairs. And so they don't come pre-sewn. And so when you're talking about the specificity and everyone's body is different, correct? So my shoe requires different sewing needs. So for a while, and for the people who are listening to this, I'm about to put my foot up into the thing to show her. Fabulous. Because I'm that kind of person. So like, the slipper will go on. There's nothing to hold the shoe on.
So there's no sole.
There is a sole. I don't have one here. They're downstairs. They're not made of wood. It's like cardboard and paste. And so there is a sole. There's usually like a suede sole on the inside and outside, and lots of there's a cardboard shank is what we, and so that shank is then customized once it's in like my hand to my arch, to my foot when it's pointed. And so each ballerina sews on ribbons and elastic to keep that shoe on the foot. So they don't come pre-sewn. And so that's why also being a ballerina comes with a very rudimentary skill set of being a seamstress.
Yeah. Well, it's just so interesting because, you know, your feet do get mangled, don't they? Or is it not mangled, but you have to develop corns and calluses and, right?
Yes. Corns can be painful, but calluses on the feet are essential. Like when I get a pedicure, the women that I go to for some self-care in the middle of a season, they know that I'm a ballerina, and they'll say, like, at the end of the season, I usually say, have at it, take all the calluses off. So I'm just going to build them again. But in the mid-season, they're like, leave callus. And I'm like, yes, definitely leave them. So it's like, they help. And you know, like with anything, you build up a tolerance. And so just the pointe shoes, and so like the sewing of that is like, I've had to, you know, I sew it right here on my right foot where my midfoot is completely permanently shifted to the left. So it looks like a Z. So wow. I use my ribbons to help support that shift.
So there's no size of ballet slipper. They don't come in a size.
They do, actually.
They do.
They
what
do.
Size do you wear?
I wear a size 5, which is normally pointe shoe sizes run about 2.5 sizes smaller than what your shoe size is.
It sounds so painful.
I mean, it's a process, right? This is why once you have enough muscle strength as a young dancer. You start building the strength to be able to hold yourself up on point. And so, yes, I affectionately call them the toe boots. So the so my work boots are a size 5. My shoe size is a size 7.5.
And I thought that it was a block of wood in the toe.
No? That is totally false. No.
And has it always been false?
Yes. Yes, I would say it has always been false. It's always been just a way to lift. How the point shoe was created was to create this like look of etherealness, that the woman is rising off her feet. So I don't think we can fact check this, but I don't think wood has ever been used in a point shoe.
Do men also go on point?
Yes, there's it's ballet companies of men that dance on point. I think it's wonderful for men to also learn how the physics changes, because your center of gravity being on a demi point, which is just like if you listeners, if you were to just raise your heels off the floor, that's what we call a demi point. It's a different amount of friction. And so when men and women are partnering, or women and women are partnering, it's you have a much smaller surface on which to balance and to.
So could both people be in point shoes at the same time in terms of when they do the lifts with you? If you're in a lift, could they be on point also? No way.
I don't think that would be advised. Someone needs to be grounded. I mean, they could be wearing point shoes, but I think it's unlikely that they would be up on point. I bet you never know.
Yeah, you never know. Something that I really like about your book is that it really shows the day in the life of a ballet dancer and behind the scenes in the New York City Ballet. And I have been in New York many times, and I was just there in May. And at one point I saw, actually it was this one little ballerina, and she was kind of running theater to theater. And I just thought, oh my God, I want to be her so bad. She's like 18, you know, but I'm just thinking like, oh, just like how bright her future could be. I know. And in the book you describe, there's a lot of negative stuff that goes on too. And I mean, there's a whole, you know, God, we could talk about eating disorders for the whole hour. I mean, you could go into the problems and also the racism in ballet. And I mean, I can't believe you're the first New York City soloist to be of the Asian race, really?
I'm the first woman that has made it through. Now, like the first female Asian American soloist in New York City Ballet's 70-year history. And I think that's
unbelievable.
It's wild to think about. And it's also wild to think about how still in this day and age, and even in this art form, it should be mentioned that men have been able to break this glass ceiling. And I think it's now as we talk about and empower more women, I think it's an important story for any person of color, anyone who wants to be a dancer, to sure. listen to and read and kind of get what it's really like, but also just how much love of the art you really must have to become a dancer. Yeah. It takes a certain commitment and drive.
Right. I mean, Gina, at your level, it's not for fun anymore. I mean, this is your life.
Surprisingly, it still is a lot of fun, but yeah. It is my life and it is my job. And that's why I'm just like, I sit here talking to you, and I just did a previous interview, and I had to say, and like, that's all things hoping. Like, we're still on the edge. Like, everything could be shut back down again. Like, we're not.
I know.
We are not out of the woods yet. Like, I'm really hoping we get on the stage.
No, I hear you. Also, and then we're going to get right over to the story. Why do you say, why did you say Black Swan is such shit? Because I really enjoyed that movie.
Well, I mean, are you paraphrasing me? Did I say that? Don't get me in trouble. Don't get me in trouble with Darren Aronofsky.
I think you did. I think you said with that piece of shit. So or you said something.
No, I don't think I said that. What is the quote? Katie, can we find the quote?
I'm going to find it. It's going to be Gina, Gina Paskogin on Darren Aronofsky. No, but what was the problem with the movie?
I think it's not a problem with the movie, it's like, it's so, I feel like the general Hollywood idea of what a dancer is that all ballerinas have eating disorders and daddy issues. And there's this inherent, obviously there's inherent drama to a life in the arts, mm-hmm. correct? But I just think it focused in on a lot of, you know, it was supposed to be a thriller and dark. And I think it missed the mark on what's also so great and fun about the ballet. There's a lightheartedness to being in this space and getting to do what one loves. And it requires immense sacrifice, but also like what I wanted to do was kind of break down like the ballerinas that I surround myself with. The men and women, like we are all extremely intelligent individuals. And not only have we dedicated our lives to this practice of craft, but we also have outside. And like, this is also like something that's being accepted. The fact that you can have outside interests and use those interests to help make one's individual art grow and feel more rich in flavor. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that it missed.
Well, you talk a lot in the book about Balanchine. Is that how you say it, Balanchine?
Yes, George Balanchine.
George Balanchine and his, you know, his method of ballet and how everybody, you know, held that up to be perfection. But it always will be a standard, right? It will always be. That will always exist. Now, hopefully there'll be something different, but that will always be, right?
Can you help clarify what you mean by a standard? Are you talking about like a Eurocentric idea of what a ballerina is?
Well, yeah, in terms of like, you know, how the costumes get passed down, like those couple of that one costume you wore that was hand painted by Chagall. Is that true?
But yes, it was that there we wear works of art.
That's
as well as performing works of art, which is like it's really incredible. So yes, there is an absolute legacy to the world of ballet that goes beyond just passing down this art form that has been in existence since the time of Louis XIV.
Right.
So
okay.
Like yes,
but here's what I'm getting at. When I first saw Broadway plays back in the 80s, and I remember seeing Cats and Les Mis, and you know, those were the big ones, and then Phantom, of course. When I saw those, everybody on stage was dancer thin. Everybody on stage seemed to be, you know, obviously the best singers, the best dancers, the best actors. And now when I go to see Hamilton or whatever, luckily it is more mixed and it seems there's a lot of heavy set people straight up that seem heavy set, but then they have these opera voices or whatever. So it does seem to have changed already in the last 30 years, but I guess we're talking about ballet.
I think it's like, I think what we need, where my line is and what I try to do through my diversity initiative, Final Bow for Yellowface, mm-hmm. and in my activism of just being a multicultural woman holding space at the New York City Ballet, is like for the art form of ballet to be able to survive into the future, for shows for Broadway to be able to continue to be relevant, we need to represent the people who sit in the audience mm-hmm. on our stages as well. And I talk about it. Like there was an extreme ideal of what a ballerina looks like, and that doesn't necessarily need to be upheld in every which way. I think there is room to allow more ethnicity, more inclusivity within the confines of like, yes, ballet is about lines, so that we have to achieve that line, but every person's line is individual to them. So being in your best shape is going to look different than the woman next to me or the man next to me.
Course.
That's the point I'm trying to make in the book about that.
Right. Like it, and if you were to look at the Rockettes, don't you all have to be the same size or something or the same height or something? They try to do that with the Rockettes.
I can't speak
yeah.
to that.
No, I don't, I'm just thinking, but I know what you mean, because there's a certain thing. They want long necks. They want a certain turnout. They want a certain arch. I mean, it's so specific. And does it all come down to, you know, the ballet master, like a Peter Martins guy?
No, the molding of a body into a body that can dance, that can be a body that can be on, regardless of shape, mm-hmm. like that molding comes from training. Mm-hmm. That, so like you learn how to point your foot in the correct ballet line. You just like you learn how to sing. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, yes, when it comes to like, who eventually gets to be in the very select group of professional ballerinas and dancers. Like some of that is God. It has to be God given. Mm-hmm, it's like sure. some of it's determined by your
DNA.
How what your makeup
yeah,
is.
Sure.
Yeah, a little bit, but then there's a lot that proper training can do.
Yeah.
And
dedication.
Yeah. So like that, I just want to make that specific point is that like, that's why the training is so intense. It's mm-hmm. much like training to become an Olympic athlete.
Oh, even more so.
You know,
I just can't get over. Yeah. And I'm thrilled to hear about that in your new book, Swan Dive, The Making of a Rogue Ballerina, because the dedication is just so intense. And, you know, you always miss holidays and you're away from your family and... Anyway, the point is you really have broken through the mold, and here you are now. You're still dancing over 20 years with the New York City Ballet, and now you're an author as well. By the way, how did you never pick up on the Pittsburgh accent, and does your family have it?
No, because like my dad has like a pretty thick Filipino. It has a very interesting like mixture, so like some... I grew up hearing him speak, and then my mom, I think she speaks in more of like the Pennsylvania accented. I mean, I still say Pello.
Yeah.
Instead of Pill. That's Pello.
Pello. Oh my gosh. That's
I say
so
Pello.
Funny.
What other word did someone say? Tell me. So it's in there. You just have to like listen very closely for it.
Do you say you got to red up the house or the has? Red up the has?
No, I say house. There's something about pop. I say pop.
Yeah, pop, of course, not
pop.
Soda. Do you say, it's so funny, Pittsburgh's so funny. Do you say Yinz Guys?
Yeah, I've heard Yinz Guys. I don't, it's not really in my vocabulary, but if I'm yeah. here, I'll be like, Yinz Guys. I'll say it yeah. as a joke, but yes, I'm aware.
Sure. And get at, just get at, you know, get at. That's a big one. And then the other one I say a lot is jag off. You know, I'll just say, don't be such a jag off.
I don't know that one. That's a good one.
Yeah, I like Jagoff. Anyway, listen, we're going to get over to your story, which basically we're really into your story. We're just going to hear a little more about the book, which I'm excited to hear about. But before we do, I want to tell everybody that we are live back at the Hollywood Improv playing Story Smash, the storytelling game show. The next show's August 28th. It's a Saturday night, and we should be on back on schedule every month at the Hollywood Improv, 7:30 p.m. Go over to HollywoodImprov.com. Get your tickets. They're gonna sell out each show, I guarantee, because we're also starved for entertainment. And I got Danny Zucker back and Blanca Patch and Melissa Peterman. And so you guys, check out StorySmashShow.com for updated dates at the Improv. And we might also be doing some remote stuff with Rush Ticks. We'll see about that. All right, you guys, you've heard her talking, the amazing Georgina Paskogin, and she does have this new book, like I said, Swan Dive, The Making of a Rogue Ballerina. And, you know, you really cover a lot in the book, like I've said. And you guys, head over to GeorginaPaskogin.com, and there you will find a lot more about you, Gina, and some beautiful pictures.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, my God. Have you ever taken a bad picture?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There's an equal number to every pretty picture that you think is pretty, which I'm so thankful for. Is an outtake. The whole book, I must say that the book cover photo was an outtake of a 12-hour photo shoot done with my dear friend, photographer Matt Karras. That is an outtake.
Wow.
That they were like, yeah, no, that's the one. And I was like, wait, what? But they're like, I was like, we took beautiful ballet photos. And it's like a lesson in marketing. But they were like, no, yeah, this is going to intrigue people to pick up the book. So I really hope
it does show
that it does.
A lot of, a lot of attitude. You're sitting in like a silver beanbag chair with a little pink tutu, and you are in the toe shoes with your fingers, with your toes on point, and you're elbows resting on your knees, like, okay, are we done here or what? And it is very funny.
I mean, we were just taking a break and I just like did something and he said to me and I was like, uh-huh. Yeah. And then it turned out to be the one that they wanted.
So funny. So funny.
So like they gave me the title, they got the picture they wanted. How about that?
Yeah, that's right. Well, now, and also though, in different countries, the photo is different, right?
Indeed. So the UK photo, which is very interesting, you can, I'm sure the readers, you could Google it. The UK photo, you'll get like, that was one of the pictures that we were going for to give them like this, these options.
So you're basically upside down.
I made a swan dive.
You're flying through the air.
Yeah.
You're flying through the air. Now, was somebody catching you or what was that? How were you?
Do you really think I'm going to give away my magic, Christine?
Gina, I can't believe what you do. Seriously, your body is just, it's just phenomenal what you've trained it to do and how it's just, you know, is everybody in your family super healthy and strong? Let me ask you that. Is it a genetic thing?
Well, I am quite lucky that my family does seem to be super healthy, super strong. My brother, they all could have been athletes, but like the breakdown is they're mostly doctors and pharmacists, and they save people in ways that I wish I could. You know, like my dad was a general surgeon, my mom was a nurse, so I am that kind of family. So I really am the black sheep artist that like went a totally different route. But like I think it goes to mention that like everyone has the same. It's an amazing what a body can be trained to do. And yes, I am admitting that I have a certain God given talent to be able to coordinate movement, and this is obviously a gift that is beyond training. But like I think it's amazing as we think about like all of our bodies are incredible. The fact that we can like build it. Mm-hmm. Like it's just the body in itself is incredible.
I'd go there.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
We all have incredible bodies.
Sure.
I don't want you to sit there and think that your body is less than mine, because it's certainly not.
No. I feel strong. I think it's all a matter of, it sounds so simple, but it's eating well. I know it's so stupid, but it is. It's eating well. What are you putting in your body? And then how much energy are you putting out? That's it. And it's very personal and everybody can decide their own. Who cares, at the end of the day. But I'm just saying, when I see ballerinas, the athleticism, and you really get to see their body and you get to see everything that makes them that athlete. In other words, if you watch football or hockey, for God's sakes, you can't discern anything. You can't see the people. But, I also respect basketball for that as well. Really being able to see the body and the strength. So I was just thinking about that. Also, you were talking about the antics backstage, and you do talk about so many funny antics backstage. Like, one thing, I never would have known this, ballerinas bring their dogs to work. So there's dogs running around backstage, including your black lab, Jet.
Yes.
By the way, I have one of my very best friends, her name is Margot Black, and her son, his name is Jet, and
it's such a great name.
Mom's last name, and so his name is Jet Black. Pretty cool.
I love it.
I love that. I know, me too. But anyway, you talk about these dogs, and one of the dogs peed on the soloist's ballet slippers.
I mean, yeah, it's like it's a whole community. When you spend that much time in a theater and like having it, caring for an animal is a tether to the outside world, correct?
Yeah.
If you look at it that way, for me, like Jet is a constant reminder that like there is stuff that's going on, like that is, that always is an outside world. But like she is like, it doesn't matter how well I think I did on stage. I'm still going out the stage door and I'm picking up Jet's poop on our walk home from the theater. And I think it's a nice humbling balance to like get the upstanding O and then go pick. And then my dog's just looking at me and they're like, you're going to pick this up, correct?
It keeps you in the moment though. It does. I think that's very fair to say.
And I think like dogs are so, they're such, it's a high stress environment. There's no denying that being a dance, like how, especially at New York City Ballet, which is so incredible. We put out so many ballets a season. My life is so fast paced. There's always something happening. It requires a certain amount of, for lack of a better word, and going for a bad pun, flexibility, just in being able to shift modes and fill in when there's an injury or and so on and so forth. I think like having animals around who are such an unconditional source of love, it helps kind of like even out the stresses of a life in the arts.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I can see that. But tell us just real quick about the day when the dog peed on that girl's ballet slipper.
Oh, so this is pre-jet. This is my friend Savannah's dog, Alfie, who was just being integrated into the senior core dressing room. So there's one special dressing room that you aim to be in because if you're with like you're with the senior core women who are just like they're just powerful.
And that's who you are right now, right?
I have since graduated to soloist. But I have been in the senior core women's dressing room. It's like I write it's a whole chapter. Dressing room 19 is forever. The bonds that are created there. It's just a magical microcosm of the microcosm that is New York City Ballet. So I think there's just like more and more stories that come from. But yeah, so Alfie peed on a pair of ribbons of the one woman who was not a huge fan of having the dog in the dressing room. And so she called me in a panic and she was like, what am I going to do? And I was like, okay, first things first, where exactly is it on? Because, you know, dancers use water to soften point shoes. So like it would have been terrible if this dog had relieved itself on the actual box toe of the shoe. Yeah. She was like, it's just on the ribbons. I was like, this is a breeze. Go rinse those ribbons off. Grab the hairdryer from the top of the spots. No harm, no foul. Where the real foul happened was when another dog, who shall remain nameless, ate an entire cheesecake while we were on stage, ready to like a triple show night. Came up expecting to have a nice dessert for all of us, and this tiny little dog had eaten the whole damn thing. We were so livid.
That must have been insane. I wish somebody should have ordered another one right away. How did that dog not get sick?
I don't know, but the dog was completely guilty, and we were so upset. Like, it's just, you know, dancers, I think it's fair to say that, like, dancers take when we do eat, when we refuel, like you're doing it for a reason. And like this obviously was a choice that like, we are going to have this cheesecake. We have earned it. It's amazing. And to have it been eaten by like a, 5 to 7 pound dog.
Yeah.
The whole thing, it just was wild. The dog is perfectly okay, guys. I don't want anyone who's like concerned about the wear, like he's okay.
And what happened with the dog who shit on your loofah?
Oh, that's the same dog. That dog was problematic.
So you're in the bathroom.
I love how we've just shifted and we're just telling the story of poop loofah instead.
Well, seriously, you were in the shower and I would have just...
Well, it's after another hard show day. It's like that we do have showers in our dressing room and we were in the queue. And I don't know if I had a date that night. For some reason, I ended up being first in the queue to help in the shower. So, you know, ran in. This is after the dog had eaten the cheesecake, like weeks before. And I come in and I go to grab my loofah, which is there. And somehow it's just like not in the place it's supposed to be. And I look down and in the stall is my white loofah with like these just wonderful gifts from this dog that it was already on thin ice. And I like screamed, you know, like clearly I'm naked. I'm like about to get in the shower. I come out, I'm like, this is enough.
Yeah.
Everyone come in here, witness this.
Yeah.
But we took it. There is a picture of it. I do not have it on call. However, we have a picture of Poop Loofah. And one of my dear friends, Hankish, like she will text it to me every once in a while just to remind me of some of the shit that we have gone through.
Yeah, it's so funny.
And colleagues.
It just gives such, your book gives such a great inside look at that world.
It's not a normal office story.
It's so interesting. And you're all pretty much so flipping young. And so it just seems like part a blast and part a curse, or part like a dungeon, you know, when you have, you know, you do three performances in a day.
You thrive off of that. It doesn't feel like it. Like, so where I have qualms with how the ballet world is, the power structure in ballet, is not necessarily where it comes to like the sacrifice. Like there's nothing that makes you feel more purposeful as a dancer in the corps or a soloist dancer or like even a ballerina to be able to dance in three ballets in a show. There's nothing, it feels so good. And like when I was in Cats, just to be Victoria and to be on stage for that entire 2.5 hour span and knowing that just because I happen to be in this white unitard and this blue lighting, they are going to see me everywhere. So like I had to be on that entire show. It's a new challenge. And I think like nowhere, I don't think anyone would fault. No dancer is going to fault that sacrifice. Right. I think when the sacrifices come, it's when you are unfairly compared to another dancer's body. When you feel like you are at your fittest, when you are told that to look, which I have been, to look less oriental on stage and to like just stagger over how so many things are wrong with that sentence. And then to not have agency as a person because you only get your schedule 48 hours in advance. And when I first started, it was, and that's an improvement. When I first started, we got our schedule the night before at around 9 or 10.
Oh, no.
And like, so those are the sacrifices that I think that we can shift and change. Mm-hmm. You're never going to become a professional dancer if you have a problem with giving your all in 3 to 5 ballets a night. Like that is the job. And I think that essentially, if people will get organically weeded out's a bad term, but like that it kind of organically sorts itself.
Sure.
Because there are a lot of dancers that do get into the New York City Ballet and go through a season or two and they're like, this is too much.
Or they want to be something else. You know, they change their mind and it's also something else.
Yeah. So like, I think those, I just want to make it clear that like, that's where the commitment to the love of ballet comes in. It's everyone wants to dance all the time.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. And you are pushing for change. And you do talk about how ballet is not a democratic system. It's just not. It's not the way it works. And what you want is to be on your own merit. That is what matters.
Well, I think it's important for the conversation is important for our artistic directors. So like the artistic director makes all of the decisions,
casting. That's Jonathan Stafford.
Yes, mm-hmm. That is correct. So like he is deciding casting. It's not like a Broadway show where they have a call and you can go and audition. No, they're like, so it's like, you can see how it's possible for a personal bias to seep in when one has control of decisions like that. And I think that's why we are having awkward and conversations that focus on how are we making it actionable being inclusive as a ballet company. As we continue to learn as a society, I think we're taking these lessons that we've all learned in this time off where we weren't in the space together, and now we're trying to apply them. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit of a back and forth because absolutely everybody wants to get back on stage. We want New York City Ballet to survive through this, and we are so grateful that, like, thank God New York City Ballet is somewhat financially sound. But there are a lot of companies who, it. And I'm so privileged and lucky to be able to say that I dance with City Ballet and know that they are more well off than some of the smaller companies.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's beyond impressive. It's, you know, it's really the top of the top of the top of the ballet world is to be with the New York City Ballet. I mean, I think that's for sure. So you've already accomplished so much, Gina. And this book is really going to get people behind the scenes of ballet and get to see a lot of really funny stuff and then a lot of crazy stuff and a lot of scary stuff. And luckily it has changed. Do you see it changing from that one artistic director to maybe a panel of people making decisions?
That's an interesting idea.
Hey, why don't you tell them Christine Blackburn threw that out? Christine Blackburn's story, were they?
Very interesting
throw that
idea.
Out. Yeah.
I don't know if it's going to change in that sort of way. Are we going to have more diverse voices as leaders of ballet companies? Absolutely. I can't wait for that to happen more. I can't wait for more strong women to lead ballet companies. Where I think change could happen first is like and it's where I'm thinking about, like, where do I want my career to go next? What am I like? This is like, okay, so like I've had a pretty awesome career, and like I know I bitch about it in the book a little bit, but like generally,
it's unbelievable.
Like, it's kind of awesome.
It's an unbelievable
and
career.
I've gotten to work with some incredible people, and I want to create a space that feels safe for young people, because it is it's a young person's game, you know. Like I hope I get to dance well into my 40s, but it's not a given. Mm-hmm. Who knows? And to dance ballet is an extreme art form. Like the demands of different dance languages are different, so I might shift. Who knows? Like, yeah. I might want to continue exploring what it means to tell stories on camera. That is super fascinating to me.
And Gina, you're obviously an actress because you've done plenty of acting.
I say, like, you know, when it comes to like everything's about like how many followers you have and what's your cachet, how much money you're going to make. But it's just like, I'm kind of like, where's the quality of the work? And
sure.
So like when I pitch myself for things or someone pitches for me, I always like to say, like, please do mention that being a ballerina is basically like being a silent actress. I've already been a silent actress for very, very, very many years. And I do, and being able to speak lines and remember lines is a completely different technique. I also am trained in that as well. So if you like my dancing, how I can communicate with no words. Yeah. I guarantee you, you're going to like what I'm able to give when I'm able to talk.
Listen, we have to wrap this up, but one more quick thing. After all this ballet, all these years, when you left the New York City Ballet to go do Cats for a couple of years and then went back to ballet, but when you did that, was that like a piece of cake to you?
No, it was so hard.
I know, wait. Okay, beyond the stamina of how long the rehearsals and stuff, but you didn't have to do the crazy stuff you did in ballet. I mean, or did you keep it up during that?
Oh, I absolutely kept it up, but I also learned trial by fire. And so Andy Blankenbuehler, who was the choreographer for that show, and the entire creative team, casting crew, just I love that whole experience. It opened my eyes in such a way.
Cats is so flippin' funny, because sometimes you look at it and it's like, what the fuck is
going
on?
It's
too crazy. It's like somebody's on drugs. It's just hilarious.
I mean, that was the thing. Jelly Lorem and Victoria, we wanted to have a little side business of selling the little, like, the CBD cookies, send them off on their way, come back, and then experience the show.
That's right. And by the way, I love your white costume in that. That's such a pretty costume.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I enjoyed that. It, like, you know, Andy and the creative team gave me a chance for me to be soft and to be a completely different presence on stage than what had been given to me at City Ballet. In City Ballet, I play a lot of strong women. I am a jumper and a turner. What I mean by that, listeners, is that like I do a lot of like the split jumps, like think of like gymnasts. I excel at jumping and I also like to turn. So revolve on the little tippy toes. Like, so I'd never really get to do what we call adagio movement, which is slow and legato and like, So Victoria, even though she's a young, sprightly character cat, so like I could put this burst of energy in there, but she's also this like beautiful sinewy. So I got a chance to do adagio on stage in that. And so like you ask if it was easier, I think it was easy. It must have been
more fun in a way.
I can't say it was easy. It was outrageously fun. I think if anyone has the chance, I keep on re-quoting my friend Christopher Gurr, who played Gus, is to like, if you get the chance to be part of a cultural phenomenon, do it. Absolutely say yes. Because it's just fantastic and wild. And there were things that were so much harder doing the same show every single night, keeping one's body healthy, dancing on a rake stage, which is a tilted stage, which in the time before we started to rake the audience, listeners, when you go into the movie theater and you see how the seats are raised, that's what we call like,
it's like a diagonal.
So for the longest time, the audience was not on the angle and the performers were on the angle. So in this case, since the cats are on the ground, it made sense to angle the stage. But then like, I don't get the nice cushy ballerina, like bouncy floor. So this was like a legit metal stage. And doing all of my ballet techniques. So yes, in that sense, I would say it was harder. And then just doing a 2.5 hour show, being in my mid-30s, like I hadn't done that since I was like in my 20s.
Yeah, sure.
Doing 3-4 ballets a night.
Was it at the Winter Garden still?
It was not. It was at the Neil Simon Theater, which is a wonderful, wonderful home. And I still will always probably consider it my home on Broadway.
Oh, yeah. To be in those different theaters and to think what has been done there, it just must be, you know, to be backstage. I've never been backstage one of those theaters. And I just think that
You have to come to New York and I will make sure that you're able to come back.
Amazing. Yeah. My daughter's 14. She's a dancer. She's danced all her life. But it's hip hop. But she's very good, and I would love, I'm going to bring her. Oh, one more thing. The Nutcracker is so flippin' racist. It's not even funny. So are they going to change that? I mean, can that be changed?
Absolutely. I think there's always room for change. I mean, like what we do as an art form, ballet is so ephemeral. What I do on stage one night is impossible to be recreated just because my body ages from that night to the next night. And so like ballet is meant to be, it's been formulated like that, which is why co-founder Phil Chin and I, like we advocate for better Asian representation on stage. Like these changes, it's not just like, we're not asking, it's not like a Van Gogh, which is like, it's not like the book. Like people, I mean, not everyone's happy with the book there. There's nothing really I can change in that book that you have in your hands, Christine, because it's static. However, the performances, a piece like Nutcracker, we can make it so it's a global tour with a global lens, not just
what happened?
From,
like Hamilton does it.
Yeah, I think it's possible, and conversations are being had. I want you to be take solace in that, like we are doing the work. Phil and I did not start this discussion; it had already been happening. We are just consolidating discussions, and we are taking those discussions further.
Phil is an Asian ballet dancer, a male, of course.
Phil is the co-founder of Final Bow for Yellow Face. He has not that danced professionally, but I call him my personal dance historian. He is wonderful. And so like through us, we've joked with each other that like through his experience and my experience, I take care of things that he might see from a woman's perspective. And he obviously has his own perspective. You know, he was born in Hong Kong and raised here in San Francisco. That's wild to like his experience. He also has a book, Final Bow for Yellow Face, which is wonderful. The wonderful read and insight too. So it's like, yeah. we are trying to create change because I love ballet. And like, yeah. I wrote this book, Swan Dive, because I still believe in the inherent beautiful qualities of ballet. Ballet can touch everyone. Doesn't yes. matter where you're from, your creed, your color. It does not matter. Ballet is a universal language. And so I've made it my mission to hold the people that I work with, and most importantly, myself, accountable for pushing the art form into the future.
Gina, you are so special, really. Dude, you are a really special person, and your life is so full of so much art, and then but also the charity work that you do and how much you're giving. And just name your, because I want everybody to head over to GeorginaPaskogan.com, and you can find more out about it. But your charity's name is what again? Something Yellow Face? So
the initiative is called Final Bow for Yellow Face.
Final Bow for Yellow Face, yes.
Yes, and that's yellowface.org.
Yellowface.org. Okay, great. Yeah, so good for you, man. Congratulations on, you know, getting that started, because that's got to feed a whole nother part of your soul. So you got a lot going on. Your mom must be so damn proud of you, man. I'm telling you.
I mean, they're still waiting me to be like, hey, so are you going to be a lawyer yet? What's going on?
I love your story. It's fabulous. You guys, again, head over and check out Georgina's website, GeorginaPaskogan.com. And also, you're on Twitter, aren't you? Because I thought I saw you, but then I didn't.
I'm on all the things, I think. Whether or not I comprehend how to use them.
It doesn't matter. No worries. Listen, thank you so much.
But I'm on Twitter, Instagram,
all the good stuff, you guys. You'll see her there. All right, you guys, one more time. On behalf of the very, very funny and very talented Georgina Paskogan, really, thank you for this conversation. This has been just great. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me, Christine. Your pleasure.
My name is
Pennsylvania.
Christine. Yeah. Whoop. My name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
We could have talked for 4 hours.
I know. And you can follow me. Follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me. Follow me. I'll keep you safe.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.